Welcome to the Italian Renaissance Podcast, where we discuss the culture and art of 15th and 16th century Italy. I'm your host, Lawrence Ginangeli. Andiamo avanti. Hello, hello, Renaissance people. We have quite the task today because we're going to be taking a step away from all of these Bellinis and religious paintings and turn our attention to the architecture in Venice during the Renaissance period, particularly how it manifests on the facades of palaces. There's something very distinct about the look of Venice, and many of the same forces that we see changing conventions in art are likewise changing conventions or influencing the development of architectural style, which ultimately results in a unique Venetian Renaissance architecture that draws influence from mainland Italy. It is a visually astounding city full of colors and domes, arches, unusual facades, really an elaborate mixture of styles and influences. Let's start to unpack that. We have established how the position of Venice at this key location on the Adriatic Sea as part of the Mediterranean means that Venice interacts differently with external cultural input and stimuli. What I mean is that we see a thriving society positioned in the middle ground between the Latin West and the Greek East, and importantly, the Islamic East as well. What is more to that, we know Venice is exchanging goods and ideas with the Netherlands and other civilizations beyond the Alps. If you remember, Giovanni Bellini was referencing Netherlandish oil painting in the 1470s. Of course, from beyond the Alps also came the Gothic style during the high medieval period. Okay, should we reconsider our discussion on Florence and the eventual rejection of the Gothic style, one might expect that similar sentiments would be found in Venice, but that is not the case. Much of how we define late medieval period leading into the Renaissance in Venice is a sort of Byzantine, Veneto, Gothic style, which changes throughout the Quattrocento in light of the developing interest in what is called the Alantica, or the Way of the Ancients. That means classical Roman revival that was popularized in central Italy. We first have to understand Venetian Gothic before we can look at how larger architectural designs shift to the predominant Alantica style from the mainland. Let us first turn our attention to the Palazzo Ducale, or the Doge's Palace, which frankly merits an entire investigation of its own, but for today we are going to focus just on the exterior design as it pertains to our topic. Remember, the Doge is this sort of leader in Venice who is elected and does not have monarchical rule. Still, he has a palace. And an interesting feature of Venice is that the term palazzo is not universally applied to architectural spaces that may indeed still be palaces. Any other major family home or estate is simply referred to as ca, right? C-A apostrophe, then in the name of the house. Like, ca being short for the Italian casa, which means house. So today, in addition to the Palazzo Palace, Palazzo Ducale, we will be talking about the Ca d'Oro, right, the House of Gold, and the Ca Vendramin, which is the house of the family Vendramin, okay? I want us to turn our focus to the design of the facade of the Palazzo Ducale. It has a long history, being constructed, as you see it today, in phases from the 14th through the 15th century. The building really is a stunning example of Venetian Gothic style, which was expanded under Doge Francesco Foscari beginning in 1424, and the palace, not the style. If we think about these dates, 1424, we already have a Renaissance architectural revival happening in Florence. but we're still holding on to high medieval Gothic that's been changed for Venetian aesthetic. One addition that Doge Foscari adds is the Porta della Carta, which is a massive Gothic portal that connects the Palazzo Ducale to the Basilica of San Marco. Just an aside, remarkably and not very typical, this portal contains a full figure sculpture of Doge Foscari. If you remember our discussion of Tommaso Rangone, there is some resistance to embellishing structures with your self-image in the public sphere in Renaissance Venice. As usual, try to get an image of the Doge's palace in front of you while we go over these details, and I'll try to be as clear as possible with the architectural terms. We are combining styles here, so Gothic, for those that need that review, in the most basic sense, is identified by pointed arches, as opposed to the rounded Roman arches. Keep that in mind. We'll need that later. If you look to the bottom level, you'll see the pointed arch. Gothic tracery is another element here. Tracery is loosely defined as decorative ornamental stonework that you see all over Gothic churches throughout Europe. It is what makes the surface look busy, but I would say it's held back in the Palazzo Ducale when compared to the late Gothic cathedrals that you find in France and Germany and elsewhere. Very prominent, though, are the trefoils and the quatrefoils, staple design elements of the Gothic. The trefoil, look inside the arches of the piano nobile, right? The second floor of the palace, the piano nobile. Look inside those arches. It's this sort of threefold, that's your trefoil. Tre meaning three, right? It has like three leaves. And the quatrefoil is a four-leaf clover-looking design inside of the roundels above each column. We got it? Pointed arches, tracery, quatrefoils, trefoils. These are the elements of Gothic design in the Palazzo Ducale. But it is not solely a Gothic building, as I said. The relationship between Venice and the Islamic lands likewise produced a series of design and style elements. While we notice the pointed Gothic arch on the ground level, what on earth is going on with that arch on the piano nobile? The Gothic trefoil is embedded in what is called an ogee arch, which comes directly from Islamic architecture. That, plus the pattern of the brick facade, the cresting, which is the decorative embellishment at the top of the palace. It looks like crenellations, but it's not. It's only a design function. These are all Islamic, and they simply give that aesthetic function to the building. This is Venetian Gothic, a trademark style in the early and mid-Quattrocento in Venice. The predominant architecture when classical revival arrives in Venice from mainland Italy, which was referred to as the terra ferma, right? As the Venetians referred to it, that is. Okay. I want to be clear that this intentional style was contemporary with the blatant rejection of Gothic design in Florence, with Brunelleschi designing the Duomo of Florence, which admittedly might have some Islamic design influence, but that's another story. And this has nothing to do with the exposure to classical antiquity, nothing to do with cultural assumptions about classical design being better or worse. The Venetians, it appears, preferred this highly ornate, over-the-top style. Very significantly, Cosimo de' Medici was temporarily exiled from Florence in 1433 and was hosted by the Venetian Republic. He brought his famed architect with him, Michelozzo, who we haven't talked about, but I would love to in the future, and he later designs the Palazzo Medici, Michelozzo does, in Florence. The book, The Art of Renaissance Venice by Norbert Hughes and Wolfgang Wolters, explains this very complicated exchange of power money and artistic style as it related to Venice's early exposure to this all'antica that may have come with Cosimo. They say that, quote, as early as the first half of the 15th century, a number of works were produced in Venice that have a place in the history of Renaissance art. It would nevertheless be mistaken to date the beginning of the Venetian Renaissance in architecture and sculpture earlier than the middle of the century, and traditional styles still had their friends well after 1450, end quote. Are you following me so far? The concept of early Renaissance art is well established in Florence by the 1430s or earlier, and here, a Florentine patron of all'antica style is exiled to Venice and has his architect with him. But they did not have a lasting impact on Venetian architecture yet, even after designing and building there. The paragraph continues that, for example, the commissioning of the Florentine architect and sculptor Michelozzo to build a library for the Benedictine Monastery of San Giorgio from 1433 to 1434 was probably an attempt by the patron, Cosimo de' Medici, to demonstrate while in exile in Venice the superiority of his native idiom, end quote. You guys see what's happening here? Among the wealthiest Florentine patrons, with a celebrated Florentine architect, they design, presumably, what would have been an early Renaissance-style library. It no longer exists, though. But the Venetians are not immediately inspired by what Cosimo and Michelozzo are doing at San Giorgio. What's more, the great Donatello, who is a dear friend of Cosimo de' Medici, sculpted in both Venice and Padua in the 1430s. Remember, Padua was part of the Venetian Republic. He is commissioned in Venice by the Scuola dei Fiorentini. Remember what the Venetian scuole are, the confraternities. And this is the one of the Florentines, dei Fiorentini. Don't you find it odd that the Florentine confraternity might favor a Florentine artist? Certainly no biased decisions there, right? It's hard to pin down the manner in which Donatello's early all'antica style made a significant impact on the architecture, either in Padua under the Venetian Republic or Venice proper. Let's recall, for example, the integration of sculpture into architecture as we saw in Or San Michele in Florence.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Renaissance people, if you are enjoying the Italian Renaissance podcast, I have good news. We're now active on Patreon. You can show your love for the show by becoming a patron and get access to additional resources, information, and artworks. Better yet, those who join the Renaissance Master or Renaissance Patron tier will get access to at least one additional podcast episode each month. My goal is to ensure that the main podcast remains a free, accessible source for everyone. Become a patron today through the link in the show notes to support the continued production of new episodes and help build and maintain this community. The Italian Renaissance Shop is now also active on Etsy, linked in the show notes. Sport our logo or choose from a growing selection of Italian art-inspired designs. Discounts are offered to select Patreon tiers as well. Your support has my immortal gratitude. Now, enjoy the show. Cosimo returns to Florence the next year, having simply made a donation of Michelozzo's library to the city as a way of saying thank you for their hospitality during his exile. This impact of Florentine artistic exposure did not bring the Renaissance to Venice, so to speak, Cosimo's native idiom. There are ripples, to be sure, but the Venetians would have to do that work themselves. I do want to be clear that mainland style will eventually be emulated in Venice, but in stages and adapt to Venetian aesthetic. That is where we are going to end today. So let's investigate the progression of style, bringing this conversation back now to the ca or palazzo. If we consider the Palazzo Ducale as the reference point for Venetian Gothic style, then we can make some assumptions about the transfer of style to other urban spaces by wealthy Venetians. Let us now look at the facade of the Ca d'Oro, the House of Gold, built between 1421 and 1437 on the Grand Canal, the house of the wealthy merchant Marin Contarini, right? These palaces along the Grand Canal also had a civic purpose. The wealthy patron could effectively beautify the city, being careful to position any luxurious decoration not as the promotion of self or a family name or house, but for the collective benefit of Venice. They also served a practical purpose as storerooms for mercantile goods. The ground level of the palace gave direct access to the canal for the easy movement of those goods. The family living spaces were above on the piano nobile, right? The noble level where the wealthy people do their daily things, right? This structure of the nobleman merchant house was practically standardized in Venice to the point where the Grand Canal in the early 1400s was lined with merchant palaces and the entrances to their family homes that doubled as business headquarters. These houses would have no doubt been in a Veneto-Byzantine or a Venetian Gothic style in the early 1400s. Let's look at the facade of the Ca d'Oro, and you can see this playing out. The lower level has comparatively less decoration. It's more functional. Wider arches allow the loading and unloading of goods. Yet, the second and third levels demonstrate a very distinct Venetian Gothic style with direct visual references to the Palazzo Ducale. Look, it's all there. Columns with OG arches springing off, trefoils and quatrefoils in between, Gothic tracery, Islamic cresting all along the roof. The original facade would have been decorated with gold and lapis lazuli, the most precious materials of the period. And we are talking about varying levels of symmetry here. The Venetian Gothic style is not very concerned with being perfectly symmetrical, like we will see in the Renaissance palace. The Ca d'Oro is a very strong example of how palaces were referencing the Palazzo Ducale, but you have to understand that this is happening in different ways across the large number of merchant palaces in Venice, each playing with different designs and decorative functions. Feel free to take some time to just do a Google search of these houses and look at the differences in the facades, a lot of which are just still referencing these same motifs, but using them differently. So, what changes? Well, the entire structure of the Mediterranean and the Republic of Venice, in essence. Venice was already expanding its territory to the mainland at the end of the 14th century. The terra ferma, or the stato da terra, as it was called, the parts of Venice that were on land and not their maritime empire, the stato da mar, right? Terra, mar, land, sea. We're talking the stato da terra. The Ottomans conquer Constantinople in 1453, and they establish powerful trading routes, a trading empire in the Mediterranean that weakened Venice's mercantile power at sea and promoting additional expansion on land so that the now dominating Renaissance style was within Venetian borders. The Renaissance palace on mainland Italy was closely tied to classical Roman revival, favoring symmetrical space, rounded arches, Roman and Greek decorative motifs, things that were well established when Cosimo de' Medici, Donatello, and Michelozzo were in Venice in the 1430s, only they did not have a strong impact as what happened in the second part of the 15th century, namely Venice conquering more lands and getting closer contact to the Renaissance of central Italy. Should we briefly look at the Palazzo Medici in Florence, built between 1444 and 1484 by Michelozzo, we see a very different family palace design. This is the same palace that likely was the original location of Donatello's David and the site of those magnificent frescoes by Benozzo Gozzoli, the Magi Chapel, which I obsess about. As you access the image of the Palazzo Medici, keep in mind that the centuries have provided many changes and additions to the palace, but most of the original structure is still there, and I'll focus only on the original elements of its design. What we have is a bottom-heavy structure, packed thick with what is called rusticated stone, giving it a fortress-like quality. This is important in Florence because the Florentines had a tendency towards violent expulsions and political upheavals. So the fortification part of the lower part of the fort, of the, not the fortress, the palazzo, serves as both a symbol of strength and accommodated any political concerns a family might have in terms of their own safety during turbulent times. But the stone smooths as you rise, and all the way up to a Roman cornice, or that piece of sculpted overhang at the level of the roof. No tracery, no trefoils, no cresting. The doors are in huge rounded Roman arches, no more pointed arches, right? The courtyard uses pietra serena, and proportions influenced by a structure that we discussed, the Ospedale degli Innocenti by Filippo Brunelleschi. Many of you will know what that means from that previous episode, right? One of the architects at the red-hot center of Roman revival in Florence. This palace, too, highly favors balance and symmetry. There are what are called bifora windows, windows that are divided in two, dominating the facade, each with a roundel above it. It truly is a magnificent structure that exemplifies the Florentine Renaissance palace. Very similar palaces spring up all over Florence, such as the famous Palazzo Rucellai and the Palazzo Strozzi. Not to be vulgar, but I often accidentally call it the Palazzo Stronzi, and if you know what that means, my apologies. Goodness gracious me. So, this central Italian revival of Roman forms in palace architecture does indeed find a place in Venice, as the Venetians try to integrate the extent of their territory and the ever more popular all'antica style by the end of the 1400s. I briefly want to point out a wild introduction to classical revival in Venice, the Palazzo Contarini del Bovolo, which is another house built for the wealthy and noble Contarini family. Look at this thing, Palazzo Contarini del Bovolo. Pushed into a corner, this tall spiral staircase filled with Roman arches, but they are sort of diagonal and slanted. Giovanni Candi, the Venetian-born architect, is using a mainland Renaissance vocabulary in his design. This is just a trial, right? And it's significant that our last and most prominent example is, in the fact, designed by an architect from a place called Bergamo, Mauro Codusi, which is a city in Lombardy that was under Venetian control at about the furthest extent of their inland military conquest, much closer to the Duchy of Milan, in fact, than to Venice proper. This building is called Ca Vendramin, and it was built by Codusi at the very beginning of the 1500s. It is among the many merchant houses built along the Grand Canal and services all of the same needs of the family that we discuss with the Cadoro. We do not see the fortress-looking rusticated stone, but maintain the appearance that this is undoubtedly Venetian. The lower level still functions as the storeroom with canal access for the movement of goods, but it has taken up major components of Renaissance style. Have a look. Ca Vendramin. V-E-N-D-R-A-M-I-N. Look that up. What do we see? Wonderful balance and symmetry. The palace is divided into three sections, both vertically and horizontally. If you slice this space down the middle, top to bottom, the facade will mirror itself. OG arches are gone, replaced with Roman ones. The roundels replace the quatrefoils. Perfect geometry replacing busy decorative motifs. Yet these roundels appear larger to me than to their mainland counterparts. And that's a nod, I believe, to the proportions of the quatrefoils in the Doge's palace. You just leave the roundel, extract the Gothic quatrefoil, and you have this large circular decorative motif that is reduced and simplified. And look at that cornice. Gone is the Islamic cresting, replaced with a cornice, a classical Roman design element that was revived in Florence. Here at Ca Vendramin, the all'antica style has taken the place, fully and effectively, of Venetian Gothic, but it leaves enough so there is still a sense of Venetian familiarity to the facade. Do you see that? Try and look at these palace facades. First the Palazzo Ducale, then the Ca d'Oro, then Palazzo Medici, and the Ca Vendramin, and you will see and witness the wide range of stylistic change and exchange within the structure of the Venetian palace, arriving at a classicized, all'antica, Venetian Renaissance palace by the end of the 1400s and the beginning of the 1500s. Another architectural doozy in the books, folks. I hope we're starting to see the lines of influence of how Renaissance means different things at different times in different places, because Venice is a mercantile republic. The spaces in which these noble merchants lived and the way they used that wealth to embellish their homes is of remarkable importance. Cultural movements like the Renaissance are driven by people and the forces around them that impact the decisions of their commissions. As always, all of these images will be posted to the Instagram and Facebook, so follow us there, like the page, please leave the show a review if you are enjoying it. It makes a big difference in getting the word out. For everyone who has contributed to the show, I thank you dearly. If you would like to directly support the show, just check the link in the show notes. Thank you all so much for joining me, and until next time, arrivederci.